Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, why is Marilyn Mosby, the DA in Baltimore, constantly being attacked because she chose to prosecute cops who she say killed Freddie Gray? We'll break that down. Also, billionaire Charles Koch, he is saying to President Barack Obama, hurry the hell up when it comes to releasing nonviolent offenders through clemency. We'll also talk about that as well. Also, how critically important it is for brothers to stand up and make their voices known. We'll talk black manhood with Dondre Whitfield and others. Plus, former Florida Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll is here to talk about her book, When You Get There. Also, Ike Turner's daughter, Tawana, breaks down the side of her dad that nobody knew for TV1's Unsung premiere preview. We'll talk to her. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV1. Folks, why is this woman here constantly under attack? This is Marilyn Mosby. She is the prosecutor in Baltimore who chose to charge six cops in the death of Freddie Gray. Yet she is under constant attack for actually doing her job. Last night on the O'Reilly Factor, former Maryland Governor Bob Ehrlich said this, that Baltimore police officers are scared to do their jobs because of Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby. This is the quote, arrests are down. They'll answer a 911 call. But when it comes to real policing, they are very fearful that State's Attorney does not have their back. And to the large extent, the same goes for the police commissioner. The police commissioner, of course, is Anthony Batts. I'm going to talk about this with our panel, Cleo Monago, behavioral health expert, former Florida Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, Dr. Wilmer Leon, host of Inside the Issues on Sirius XM, and Avis Jones-DeWeaver with the Exceptional Leadership Institute for Women. Folks, this has been a constant attack. In fact, we tried to actually find the video. They took the video down off the website. I don't understand why. But what's crazy to me is she is the state's attorney. Her job is to prosecute with folks when she sees a crime, whether or not that person is a cop or not a cop. But all of a sudden, because she chose to prosecute six cops, all hell is breaking loose, and the entire police department is, in a sense, shutting itself down, slowing down, and people like former Governor Bob Ehrlich are giving them cover mm-hmm. by somehow saying that even they are above the law.
This goes right to the them versus us mentality, which to a great degree has caused this whole problem in the first place. Marilyn Mosby is doing her job, but there has been this closed rank, this occupier versus occupied mentality, Bob Ehrlich being a Republican, Mosby being a Democrat. You've got politics involved in this. You've got the get tough on crime, constant Republican mantra playing into this. And this is the blue flu. And they are really engaged in a public relations campaign, trying their best as a jury is eventually going to have to be seated to create a narrative that a jury, even after seeing the evidence and hearing witnesses, is going to say, well, the police were just doing their jobs.
But what offends me here is the fact that her job is to prosecute, period. And what Ehrlich is saying and what other people are saying, when Megyn Kelly is running her mouth on Fox News and others, is essentially that cops are above the law. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't prosecute them. They're just doing their jobs. But nobody's sitting here saying, how did this guy end up with a severed spine and is dead, who's in police custody?
Well, Roland, it would be different if this was an exception. But what we've seen lately, it's become a norm. And because of body cams and because of people taking video, now we have actual footage. In the state of Florida, we've had instances, and of late, where police have taken aggressive action, but because of the cameras that individuals have had, we've been able to see the rest of the story. What needs to occur is to acknowledge that there is a problem and then to attack that problem and not to give cover to whether it's law enforcement officers or the persons that are doing the violent crimes, but not to give cover to anyone, but to truly investigate what's going on and to have some civil obedience in our communities across the board, regardless of where you live.
Cleo and Avis, what we're seeing here is we are seeing folks who are sending the signal to other DAs, don't you dare prosecute a cop, because we are going to come after you, we're going to destroy you and other police departments. It's okay for you guys to do a slowdown, because how dare you try to hold some cops accountable for a man who's dead?
Well, as we know, Mosley did something very unprecedented. In her position, she did not take the cop's side. She took the side of justice and investigation. And that was unprecedented in this country. And I think a lot of these cops who prefer to be racist and get away with it are nervous. And they're creating this fake problem that's making it bigger than it is under her watch so she can look bad. So this is pretty normal under racism. And what's going on here is that the police departments are not responding like they should do to local crime. And it's resulting in a crime spike, which I know we're going to talk about later. But this is to be expected. I mean, what you just recommended is a good idea. These rational suggestions are always good ideas. But like I always say, racism is not rational.
Avis, this is also why people want special prosecutors. Mm-hmm. Because you have a police who are essentially saying, you know what, we're not going to help you in the other cases. We're not going to see them testify. We are so ticked at you, Marilyn Mosby, that you had the audacity to charge one of our brothers. And I keep saying this here. I don't want to hear another cop talk about why people in the streets need to talk to cops about crime when the greatest no snitching policy in America takes place in police departments around this country. They can't say jack about any gang or any neighborhood when cops consistently say, don't you dare snitch, don't you dare talk, and essentially they are essentially threatening the DA.
Yeah.
Do this again, and we're just gonna sit here and y'all can do whatever the hell y'all want in Baltimore.
These are strong arm tactics.
Yep.
This is criminal organized crime, basically. I see this as just another form of hostile policing. When you have the concerted organized effort to say, we are just not going to police, we are going to allow anything to occur, and we're just gonna sit by and watch. And as we watch the bodies stack up, we're gonna still not do anything.
Yeah, she doesn't have our back.
Yes.
But you know, the bottom line is you have citizens in these communities that pay their taxes.
Yeah.
And the responsibility
and pay their salaries.
The responsibility of government is to have safety and security. And so these citizens' tax dollars, the public's tax dollars, are not being utilized for their salary for them to stay at home and not come and protect their communities.
Let's also look at,
if they don't want to police, they need to clean out the police department. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be employed. If they don't want to do their jobs, they need to get a pink slip and have people hired who are actually going to do their job.
Yeah, and I'm quite sure if you put the word out in terms of that we're hiring because folks don't want to do their job, you're probably going to get some applicants.
Hello.
We're not looking at a slowdown by the police officers because of benefits. We're not getting a slowdown from police officers because of a decrease in overtime pay. We're getting a slowdown from police officers because a prosecutor decided to charge six cops with murder who, while a man was in their custody, had his neck broken and his voice box crushed.
And what they want is what we're seeing in Cleveland, the fact that here we are more than 170 days since Tamir Rice was killed, mm-hmm. and the two cops who were involved have yet to be interviewed by the Sheriff's Department, who is leading the investigation, because what they want to do is they want to drag out any time there's a case involving cops. They don't want it moving forward, because what these Baltimore cops are saying is, don't you dare, you will never, ever touch one of ours. And that's one of the reasons why, as we discussed yesterday, Baltimore, how is it that Baltimore has a cap on lawsuits? Mm-hmm. That's different from the rest of the state of Maryland.
Mm.
Because the Baltimore and the commissioner in Baltimore doesn't have the power to fire cops. It is because the cops in Baltimore and their unions, what they have been able to do is essentially say, we run this city. And they're trying to essentially threaten Marilyn Mosby, and I don't understand why more media folks are not standing up for her for doing her job, which she is paid to do, and that is prosecute wrongdoing. We come back. We're going to talk about more issues here with our panel. Plus, Ike Turner's daughter speaks out about her father's image as we get ready for tomorrow's Ike Turner Unsung season premiere. Also, actor Dondre Whitfield encourages success with young black men, one conversation at a time. And we'll talk with him and others about that. The latest news, stay up to date and informed at news1.com. It is 9 after the hour. Back on News One Now on TV One in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, May has been the deadliest month on record for the city of Baltimore. The murder rate skyrocketed with a record high of 43 murders. Of course, city is still dealing with the fallout of protests and after the death of Freddie Gray, 25-year-old African-American man who died while in police custody back in April. I want to come back to our panel on this because what we are seeing here, I don't care what anybody says, there's no coincidence between this high murder rate and these cops pulling back from doing their jobs. And I believe what these cops are saying is, we're going to show y'all what happens when we decide that we're going to stop policing, we're going to stop talking to people, we're going to stop investigating. And then I think what they're saying is, people are going to say, oh my God, all these murders, y'all need to go back to do what you were doing before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's exactly.
Well, it's a complacency factor, but the citizens, the people in these in this community and around the country, need to put the pressure on the police department. Not only this one, but any other police department that's derelict in their duty, and that's what's happening here. We're not having an outcry for that.
And what should be happening? And let me be perfectly clear to folks with Black Lives Matter movement and others as well. There should be just as vigorous protests
yes.
right now in Baltimore over these 43 murders mm-hmm. and demanding that the police do their job fairly, because again, they are there to protect and serve.
Absolutely.
Not themselves, but the people as well. And so now the critics, though, are saying, see, oh, y'all don't want to talk about the 43 people who have been killed. You only want to talk about Freddie Gray.
Well, the downturn in arrests doesn't necessarily mean that criminals are running amok. It could very well mean that a lot of otherwise innocent people who were being improperly arrested mm-hmm. aren't getting arrested. There's also no data to really show that there's a direct correlation between police and the type of policing that they're engaged in and murder rate. Murder rate is attributable to so many other factors, such as poverty, that the fact that the police are now standing down, that there's no direct correlation between the stand down in the police and the murder rate.
Well, but here's the issue. When all of a sudden, it skyrockets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the deal. It's not like
of course.
All of a sudden, things just go haywire all of a sudden.
Right. And,
but
of course, as you know, the goal of that, as we already said, is to make it look like Mosby is problematic, and she's in the way of progress, and it's because of her and her taking a look at this whole thing the way she has that this is going. It's a blame thing. It's a conspiracy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. And here we are. You're right. It's a 40-year high that we've seen in the murder rate just in the past month in Baltimore.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. And there are no arrests around these murders. Now, you know, call me a conspiracy theorist, but who is doing the murdering? Really? I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them. It is in their interest to have a spike in murders right now to
yes.
be able to justify their heavy-handed policing over the years, in which they've paid millions and millions of dollars to be able to cover it up. But now that they can't cover it up, all of a sudden
right.
they decided they didn't want to police.
So let me throw this out. So it's interesting. So the governor basically says to the mayor, Stephanie Rawlins Blake, you know, it's about time you called me for the National Guard. So here's something interesting. So we are quick to call the National Guard to protect property.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Now I'm just putting it out there. Mm-hmm. So if they're quick to call the National Guard to protect property, where's the governor? I want to know, where's the governor on television demanding answers from this police department to 43 murders in May?
Haven't seen him yet.
I think who's being murdered?
And where?
I think that's significant. I mean, it's likely the majority of people who live in Baltimore who are Black who are being murdered.
Who didn't vote
just
for
like Freddie Gray. These people are being seen as irrelevant. And how dare Mosby see she's going to arrest these people who are protectors and servers of who is relevant.
And here's what I think the audience cannot lose track of, which is not getting articulated on Fox News. Freddie Gray's neck was broken and his voice box was crushed while in police custody. Mm-hmm. Eric Garner was choked out by police while in police custody. Victor White III, handcuffed with his hands behind his back
right.
in
you
the backseat of
Louisiana.
Shot, and they say he shot himself. What we are responding to is improper police action, not proper policing.
Hold tight one second. I want to go to this next story. I want to get this in. That is billionaire Charles Koch is calling on President Obama to release more nonviolent offenders from prison who qualify for the new clemency rules under the Department of Justice. President Obama announced this initiative in 2014. There are thousands of people who are still waiting. He's only commuted or pardoned about 20 different people. Now, Koch has been one of the folks who has partnered with many people who are liberal and progressive, saying we have a pathetic system where we have nonviolent offenders who are thrown in jail. I don't want to hear this crap from people saying, oh, this is him just trying to. No, they've been there for quite some time. This is one of those issues where you can disagree with somebody on nine issues and then you can agree with them on one issue.
Yeah.
But the reality is the president has been slow. Mm-hmm. The president has, when it comes to his pardons and commutations, he has been way too conservative in doing so. And he talks one thing, he talks a good game about second chances, but he has the power in his hand to pardon and to issue these clemency rules. And one of the problems with these rules, they essentially say you have to be a perfect inmate. Mm-hmm. So let's say you came in the first couple of years and you were a little rowdy, but for 10, 12, 15 years you've been a model person. Well, that's going to disqualify you. The president needs to get far more aggressive. I think Charles Koch and others are right. He needs to step up when it comes to clemency, when it comes to nonviolent offenders in our prisons.
But you're also saying that people who are critical of the Koch brothers need to get over it because this is an important issue for everybody.
Well, no, what I'm saying is criticize them on voter suppression. Criticize them on every other issue. But when somebody is right on the same issue you on, have the guts to say they're right, too.
So you don't believe that the conservative Koch brother is trying to do things that the black community might be appeased by?
No.
You don't think that's what's going
no.
on?
No. No, because if your record shows as a libertarian, this is where you stand. It's just like, again, I might disagree with Senator Rand Paul on 20 issues, but if he's right on this issue, I gotta have the guts to say
he's right on
this one, and not go, well, you know, I don't wanna, you know, no.
But the bottom line is that there are many lives that are negatively impacted because of stupid arrests, misdemeanor arrests that should not have occurred. For example, civil citations should be something that's addressed on a table at the national level so that you don't incarcerate someone and get a record so you can't get scholarships to go to college,
right.
You can't get into the military, you can't open a business, you can't buy a home,
you can't get
loans, etc. So the bottom line is this is the right thing to do because our penal system is not doing any sort of rehabilitation. It's just making more hardened criminals. So what would be better for these individuals to do? Come out, get a job, work with corporate America so they can be employed and take care of their family to be a productive citizen.
This is a perfect example of the president talking about a very good policy, but then putting things in place so that really the policy becomes almost impossible to implement by his own standard. And he didn't even really get enough money in the budget to have enough attorneys in the Justice Department to process the applications. This is mismanaged the same way the Affordable Care Act was mismanaged when they tried to implement that.
But he said he has a pen and a paper, and if he wanted to get it done, he can get it done.
I realize that.
The sad reality is he has the lowest clemency rate of any modern president. This is not an aberration. This president has not utilized his pen at the level that his predecessors have. And the fact that he's gone on record with this new policy and also has underfunded it, hasn't put the right people behind it, constructed it in such a way so that it's almost impossible for it to actually bear out in real life is extremely disappointing.
Which makes it difficult not to consider a conspiracy. You have the black president not moving on this, and you have the Koch brothers telling him to move on this.
No, I mean, first of all, I don't see the conspiracy. The bottom line is, I think what you have is you have a Democratic president, President Obama, who is still falling into this old trap of, well, I don't want to necessarily be soft on the crime. They're all scared about what if one of these folks gets released and they do something. Look, there's always a possibility, but the bottom line is here. There are thousands of people who have applied and who qualify for this new clemency procedure, and he should use the pen. Look, you got 2 years, and here's the other piece. Where in the hell are civil rights groups? Where in the hell are civil rights leaders? Okay, don't run around holding news conferences and having seminars and symposiums talking about nonviolent offenders, talking about felons' rights, and then when it comes to this issue, you're frankly being silent. This president needs to be pushed on this issue, and there needs to be public pressure on him, and it has nothing to do with him being black, has nothing to do with protecting him. It's about doing what's right, because here's the piece. When he leaves office, he will not have the power to grant clemency.
That's
he will not have the right to the power to grant pardon. So use it while you got it.
You're asking the leadership of those organizations to have some guts and challenge an African-American president. They haven't done it up to this point. They're damn sure not going to do it now.
Well, guess what? Exactly. And that's why we have the right to sit here and call them out for not doing what they're supposed to do, because don't say one thing and then you don't do another.
But keep in mind, we don't only have African-Americans in prison. We have a whole
bunch of
people incarcerated. So this is not a black issue.
Right, but the civil rights groups, the black civil rights groups,
got to say something.
Do not want to say nothing bad about Barack Obama.
Well,
they have paralysis.
Well, I know.
They won't move because the president is black, and we can't say nothing bad about the president.
Well, I'm sorry.
The clock's running out.
The clock is running out. For every day it passes and he doesn't move, that's another day when his presidency may be over. It's time for him to act.
Mm-hmm.
Cleo, Wilmer, Avis, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Jennifer, hold tight. Don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about your book when you get there. When we come back, also Unsung is back for a new season starting with Ike Turner. We'll talk with his family. Plus, brotherhood leads to manhood after Dondre Whitfield will tell you about his manhood tour. Folks, it is 24 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Well, Jennifer Carroll is one of many first. She was the first black female aviation mechanic in the Navy, the first black Republican woman elected to the Florida legislature, and as lieutenant governor, the first black person to be elected on a statewide level in Florida. But it wasn't always easy. She had to learn how to overcome many of the obstacles put in her way, and she chronicles her experiences in her autobiography, When You Get There, and she's still with us. So let's talk about it. I mean, here's what's interesting. I forgot when I first met you. So it may have been back in 1996 at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia.
You remember that?
Oh, I got a good memory. And what was interesting to me is that there's always this constant conundrum between black folks and black Republicans, which to me makes no sense whatsoever. And so when did you decide that I'm going to align myself with the party, and how have you had to deal with that constant, in essence, backlash and criticism of what in the world is wrong with you? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always been a Republican. When I received my naturalization, I'm an immigrant to this country, born in Trinidad, West Indies. And my parents, when they received their naturalization, became Republicans, because in the area where we lived in New York, Long Island, if you weren't Republican, you weren't going to get anything done on your street. If the snow was there, the water main broke. So I remember that, what my parents said. So when I received my naturalization, it was just a natural gravitation to become a Republican, not understanding what it meant to be a Republican then until later in life when I chose to run for a congressional seat. A Democrat asked me, are you liberal or conservative? And the question mark came on, okay, what's the difference between the two? And that was my first entrance into why am I a Republican? So the philosophies of what Republicans say they're about, lower government, more personal responsibility, and all the mantra, went along with how my upbringing was, my conservative Caribbean upbringing with my parents. Throughout the years, what I have found is that it seems to be just words. Because it's really all about the person and what that person brings to the table and how passionate they are for serving the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I considered myself, being that type of person, regardless of party affiliation, to have that access for the individuals, to have access to me, to help them with getting over the barriers and bureaucracies of government.
Is it frustrating for you, though, in trying to get whites in the party to understand that, one, you don't have to be afraid of black people.
Mm-hmm.
Stop running from black people. You can actually communicate with them. And actually, if you talk about the issues, you might have folks who might listen to what you have to say, as opposed to not talking at all.
At all levels, because you tend to see more of the outreach come during a campaign cycle. And what I've tried to push my party to look at is get involved in the communities that you're not familiar with, that you don't have a relationship with in non-election times. It doesn't matter if you have a predominant amount of Democrats elected in an area, but if you see a need and a concern,
mm-hmm.
economic development, failing schools, you still go into those areas and offer listen, first of all, and then offer solutions to help with regards to those social issues and other things that can really lift the high tide of all boats. But what I found has just been a window dressing. You put a couple people in here during a campaign, you have a coalition established here, but at the table as Lieutenant Governor, when I saw myself not being included at the table or being one of one at the table, and my suggestions or input was kind of discounted or discarded because of who was bringing the information and the solution forward, it let me know that I wasn't totally included in that dialogue and that conversation that could advance things, because I know things from personal experience that they would not know.
Well, but also, here you are, you're sitting here going, wait a minute, you guys want to use me in ads, you want to tout me on websites and tout me in interviews, but don't just tout my skin color in being in your party. I bring something to the table that you desperately need.
Not only with that too, but look at campaigning. If you look at the consultants that are, that's having the strategy to win the elections, it doesn't include many of the times people like me at all levels.
Hell, that's almost the same thing on Democrat too. So trust me, that's definitely where they protect the money there.
But that can help situations such as Ferguson, such as Baltimore, because we bring a different perspective and understanding as to what those issues are, the communication, the message, and also to that connection with those leadership.
You also had to deal with the fact that you were forced to resign as Lieutenant Governor. And you did not take kindly to it. Governor Rick Scott was reelected. There's no reason you still should be Lieutenant Governor. That experience, did that tick you off, anger you, how you were treated?
It did. And I tried to handle it in the most cordial way and not not exposing the governor, which I ended up doing anyway in my book, because I was just really sick and tired of it. It was no reason for his, well, he didn't even ask me. He sent his emissary to ask me to resign. But the bottom line is, it was already an orchestrated effort to get me out of the way. I was not accepted by his people. I should not be one of those, because I'm not the chosen one to move and ascend into the governor's position. So therefore, let's demonize her and get her out of the way. And this was a good way for them to do so. But I left with my head held high with God on my side. But I also wanted to explain in my book, when you get there, that although you go through these adversities and things are very, very hard, you have the power from within to excel at any level, and no man can tear you down. Whatever God has in place for you, that it will be there no matter what, and you just have to abide by Him and believe in Him that He is going to get you through. But once you have education, once you have knowledge, once you have self realignance and assurance, that is threatening to most people that don't look like you, particularly being a woman, being a black woman in prominent positions. Those things are very threatening, unfortunately, and you have to deal with it.
Folks, the book is When You Get There, an autobiography by Jennifer Cal. We certainly appreciate it. Be sure, glad we finally got you on.
Absolutely.
And be sure to come back.
All right, thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Folks, coming up is Black Music Month. We're previewing the season premiere of Unsung, featuring Ike Turner with his daughter and cousin. Plus, actor Dondre Whitfield helps young black men become leaders with his manhood tour. For the latest news, stay up to date and informed at news1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. Or go to News One or our News One Facebook page. It is 25 before top of the hour. News One now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
June is Black Music Month, and TV One is kicking it off with the Unsung season premiere featuring musician Ike Turner. Here's a sneak peek.
He took the blues and created his own Ike Turner sound.
You know, they call it what they want to call it. I just be playing what I play.
Think you know Ike Turner?
Ike was a violent man when I met him.
My dad did not have a halo on his head, but he didn't have horns either.
Think again.
The movie put such a bad aura on him.
It made his life a living hell.
The episode delves deep into Turner's emotional traumas and his challenges after the movie What's Love Got to Do With It, as you just saw in that clip. Ike Turner's daughter, Tawana Turner, and his cousin, Lester Jack, join us via Skype from Los Angeles. Folks, welcome to News One Now.
Thank you.
This is when you, it has to be hard for both of you that when people think of Ike Turner. They don't think about a brilliant musician. They don't think about someone who really ushered in a new sound that so many others have benefited from. The first thing, the last thing most people think about is him beating Tina Turner. And anytime there's a case of domestic violence in America, Ike Turner names pops up.
Yes.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
That is true. That movie, to put it in his words, assassinated his career.
And so how did he confront that? How did he deal with that? And did he ever come to grips with what he went through and dealt with and saw as a child that impacted him later in life?
Yes, it kind of followed him, never went away. And but he had the strength, you know, that God provided him to keep going forward. And I guess, you know, what's overlooked majority of the time that this is a human being.
Yes.
First and above all. And that the fact that he had a gift from God. And sometimes, you know, you will go through some things. But what God gives you, no man can take from you.
Yes.
You know, you can unbless yourself, but no man can take it from you, regardless of what's done.
Did he did he deal with and witness and was engrossed in domestic violence growing up as a child? Was he beaten? Because my point there, all those things that happened to us as a child show up when we are actually as adults. And if we never acknowledge it and confront it, we never actually deal with it.
Well, what he really ended up swallowing and deal with majority of his life, an internal whooping that he had within his cell that was created through, he was raped on three occasions at an early age. And that would impact any man as far as dealing with a woman. And even to think that a man that had went through such an ordeal would be able to, you know, coexist in society in dealing with people. But, you know, he had this inner structure that kind of fought it off for years, but it never went away.
Tuana, he was your father. What was that relationship like? Was it a loving one? Was it a volatile one? And how did you try to help him come to grips with that trauma, as Lester described, being raped three times as a child?
The Ike Turner that I know, that I know personally, was very loving, very caring, and very giving. Granted, like I made in my statement, he didn't have a halo, but he didn't have horns either. And he was very supportive. We would have deep discussions on his views of how he saw women, how he viewed women, but he loved people. And he was, everyone that met him, I would hear this all the time. He's nothing like I thought, because what they thought is what they were spoon-fed. They didn't get to, anyone that met Ike Turner, not the entity, but Ike Turner, the person, saw what a beautiful person he was.
Well, we certainly are going to focus on his life, his career, in the season premiere of Unsung. It will air tomorrow right here on TV One, June 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern. We certainly hope folks will check it out. Tuana and Lester, I'm sure both of you will be watching it as well. And I'm very curious to know what the reaction is going to be after the airing tomorrow night on TV One.
They will get America will get a chance to see another side of Ike Turner.
All right. Tuana Turner, Lester Jack, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Folks, coming up, young black men learn the steps to success in actor Dondre Whitfield's Manhood Tour. We also chat with Dondre, chat with several of the brothers. That's right, they're kicking in our green room. So it's going to be I call it the black room. It's going to be an interesting little conversation we have about where we stand in terms of black manhood in the 21st century. It is 16 before top of the hour. News One Now on TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Comedian Tracy Morgan gave his first interview since he was involved in the deadly crash that took the life of his dear friend James McNair last year. He spoke to Matt Lahr on NBC's Today Show, and here's what he had to say.
The case is settled. but the pain is always going to be there for Jimmy Mack. Bones heal, but the loss of my friend will never heal, because we know each other a long time. But I'm happy that Walmart stepped up to the plate in a tremendous way, and they took full responsibility, as you said, because it's true. They took full responsibility, and I'm just really happy that they looked out for Jimmy Mack's family, because I know my friend can rest in peace now. I love comedy. I love comedy. I'll never stop loving her. I love comedy, and I can't wait back to get back to her. But right now, my goal is just to heal and get better, because I'm not 100% yet. I'm not. And when I'm there, you'll know it.
Oh, we certainly wish Tracy Morgan a speedy and full recovery. He's a good brother, and so we can't wait to have him back on the stage. Folks, between police brutality and discouraging images in the media, it's important now more than ever that our young black men see examples of success. That's what Dondre Whitfield, Brian Heat, and Hassani Pettiford are intending to do in their manhood tour. I got all three of them on the show right now. Gents, how you doing?
Doing awesome. Great.
Doing great. Well, great.
All right. So last night I was here in D.C. There was a meeting. Minister Louis Farrakhan held with a number of folks here in D.C. Preparing for the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March. That's going to take place on October 10th. And it's interesting. We're having this conversation with that coming up because when the Million Man March was held in 1995, that was the period of all the drama with O.J. and the whole image of black men.
That's right.
And what folks don't understand, I just had Michael Myers on my radio show yesterday, and he was talking about how, he says Fox News, how they demonize black men as well. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people really understand how images, the role that they play in really shaping and forming how people see themselves and how we view each other.
Definitely, and I mean, you know, this is one of the biggest issues that we face today in our community. You know, the three of us have been blessed to have a mentor by the name of Dr. Tyrone Bledsoe, affectionately known all of us as Doc.
Yeah. Right.
And he is the founder and CEO of an organization called Student African American Brotherhood. I'm the national spokesman. And it serves to enhance higher education in colleges, universities, middle schools, and high schools through social, cultural, and spiritual enrichment. And this year actually is the 25th anniversary, and we're gonna have a powerful gala event in Los Angeles in October to commemorate that. And for the past 2 years, I've had the pleasure of working with these two powerful speakers and mentors. And last year, I started a tradition of fireside chats in my suite to have these young men have a place to be able to express themselves in whatever way they wish. Last year, we were up in the suite till 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And this year, we broke the record till 5 a.m. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that jumps out at me, when you talk about that, I mean, as a life member of Alpha Phi Alpha, we have brotherhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had our reunion, Texas A&M, our chapter Pi Omicron. And so we go to reunion, so we got young frat brothers and graduate brothers, and they said, hey, so man, look, we got food coming. They said, we've got sorority sisters and the girlfriends coming by, and we all look at each other and we go, that's not a damn brotherhood.
Right, right.
And so we shut it down.
Right.
We said, first of all, call your girlfriends, they can't come.
That's right.
And this all sorority sisters, they can't come.
Right.
Cancel all the crap y'all had planned, they can't come.
Right.
And I think we left there at 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to show them what a brotherhood was.
Right.
And in that conversation, you literally had a brother who was in the Iraq War who talked about killing the man with his in hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
You had brothers who were talking about sexual abuse. You had brothers who were dealing with marriage difficulty.
Right.
So we had to explain to them, one of the problems for black men is we don't have what I call those safe spaces to have real discussions
where
we can actually share stuff.
Well, this is exactly what we were talking about in the suites and the fireside chats, because we were going, well, where do you go outside of Saab? Where do you go if you don't have a mentor like Dr. Bledsoe? Where do you go? So at dinner, we actually decided that the manhood tour was necessary, Brian.
Not just necessary, but vital.
We're talking about, I'm a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, belief in the brotherhood as well, and we want to eliminate those distractions. And what we saw at Saab was an opportunity to take that same, those core values, those core principles, and take them nationally. I run a program at Prince George's Community College called Diverse Male Student Initiative. Started in 2009 with the president, Dr. Charlene Dukes. Over 700 men have gone through the program. One of the biggest pieces before you start to talk about purpose and value is to get the young men to eliminate the distractions they see in media. Mm-hmm. Eliminate distractions they have in terms of who they are versus who they truly are. And that's the value of the Manhood Tour, is waking these young brothers up, igniting who they are, igniting their value, igniting their purpose. But we have to eliminate that distraction, like you were talking about, because you have those elements around them, the guys can't focus. And it's hard to hear them or for them to hear us when they're being distracted.
But also, I think the difference there was, we also, it was older brothers and it was younger brothers.
That's
and
right.
We had to make it perfectly clear, yeah, this is a reunion and you guys are running the chapter, but we need to remind you of what a brotherhood is.
Right. It's so important, your point. When men get alone in their own social space, they're able to have conversations and deal with issues that they typically would not feel comfortable with dealing with when women are present. And, you know, one of the core beliefs that we have...
Not just women, but all games. Because I went to a male church retreat,
that too.
Yeah. And man, it was about golf and basketball, and it was fishing, and I'm sitting there going, I know a bunch of y'all are broken, so it's also telling brothers, we got to learn to... We always want there to be spades or bidwits or dominoes. And I'm like, hold up. Sometimes we got to put the games away.
That's right. Roland, I call that low-hanging fruit. Those are low-hanging fruit conversations, sports. And once again, they have their place.
Right.
I'm a diehard Steeler fan, but we're not going to have a two-hour conversation with broken men about the record of a team they don't play for. We're not going to have that conversation.
I got to go to a break. I want you to pick up this point when we come back, all right? We're back on News 1 Now in just one moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. R&B diva Lela James turns 32. Actor and comedian Wayne Brady was 43. Wentworth Miller, known for his role in Prison Break, turns 43. And Dennis Haysbert is in good hands, turns 61 years old. Also is a golf buddy of ours as well.
Oh, sure.
Before we went to the break, you about to make a point.
Yeah, now, one of our core beliefs is that every man needs a man. Because my own individual expression and background and upbringing as a man may be different than yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have things in your life that I'm deficient in.
Mm-hmm.
And I may need you to make me more of a complete man. And that's really the platform and the premise of what we're doing with the
that's
Manhood
right.
Tour. So we're able to cover issues like family and mm-hmm. fatherhood, life skills, purpose, because our understanding and concept of manhood is a bit altered.
One of the things that kills me is when I young, especially young brothers, I have a mother or someone and say, take a picture with my son, and it's a damn prison photo.
Mm.
And I'll tell them, yo, I ain't taking a photo if you're gonna have this hard look. I'm like, learn to smile.
Yeah, man.
Right.
And I've heard some people say, man, I can't believe you did that. I'm like, no, somebody has to tell a young brother, it's okay to smile, bro.
Right,
it's
absolutely.
A photo. This is not Cook County Jail.
You know, right. It's so interesting that you say that, because during the national conference this year, one of the keys to manhood that I spoke about, the last one that I gave them was their smile.
That's right.
And yep. Ironically, we went to celebrate. We went to a restaurant, and they had no seating for us. And I literally went in there, everybody said, what are we gonna do? So I went up to the front, I spoke to the sister there, and literally with the greatest smile, and she sat there and we spoke for 2 seconds, she said, hold on 1 second, let me see what I can do. And I turned around and I said, number six, which was the last one that I gave them, the keys to manhood. I mean, you really-
You rolling hard, you ain't getting a table.
No, you can't.
No. Right.
It's very difficult for you
right.
to really live out the throes of manhood when they haven't been clearly
right.
defined for you.
And
that's
manhood,
why our tour is necessary.
And manhood, maleness, and masculinity are three completely different things, and
right.
I think we've got those things confused.
Final comment.
And the interesting part is, part of that is being defensive, that street credibility thing, let me protect myself from
right.
you. The other side of it is, you smile when you know your value. When you know who you are, you feel great about yourself, and you project it through your whole body, your whole posture.
What's the next place you guys gonna be?
We are going to be here. These guys flew in from LA and Atlanta. We're doing a speaking conference at Prince George's called the Diverse Male Student Initiative Building Game Changer Conference today and tomorrow.
Right.
They're speaking. We're going to shut it down, ignite the young men, building game changers.
And we're taking this on the road. So for
that's
anybody
right.
who's interested, we want them to go to themanhoodtour.com to find out more information about how we're coming to a city near you.
Themanhoodtour.com, also SaabNational.com.
Yes.
But go to themanhoodtour.com. .com? TheManhoodTour.com, SobNational.org. Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, sir.
That's right. All right, folks. Tomorrow, News 1 Now, we'll find out what millennials think about marriage. Plus, our comedians get crazy on Wildin' Out Wednesday. Hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin or News 1. I got to go. Holla!
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.